At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, everybody, this is Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
Hi, hi, hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Kate and I are looking a little extra sexy today.
We are. We did a basement photo shoot on my iPhone with...
There's no better technology.
My light ring that falls over. And it was a whole situation. But we are looking very nice today. And we'll post pictures because that's what we do.
That's what we do.
Yep.
We just, want to make us look like the cute moms that we are.
Yeah, I mean, we are cute on the
inside. We're not in scrubs today. We have the day off.
Yeah.
Kate says dress nice and put on makeup. So, bitch, I did it.
She did. I did not dress nice. I just did the makeup. So I'm wearing like a t-shirt and some army leggings.
We talked about how my girls were looking a little higher than yours.
Devin chose an underwire. I did not because it's my day off. God damn it.
I love it.
So we have it's so hot in my house yesterday and I'm so relieved to be like sitting in my basement and it's nice and cool.
Remember how 6 months ago we were like, I'm freezing?
Yeah, not
this
anymore.
This basement sucks.
I know.
Like, what the hell?
That wasn't even 6 months ago. That was like a month ago we were freezing down here.
There was that too.
Yeah, so it's better now.
Mm-hmm.
How are all you doing?
We're good.
I hope you are.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah, good.
This is one of the rare occasion days where Kate and I get to record multiple episodes in the same day.
I know, this is great.
Yeah. So that also just means we don't have new Patreons to announce, only because we just recorded another episode like literally an hour ago.
Yeah. So the Patreons are all on that one. Listen,
they're
to that
all
one.
On that one.
Yep.
Probably by the time this one comes on, there's even more. So it's not like we're ignoring our new Patreons.
Exactly.
So we'll just catch up with you guys on the next one.
Yeah, baby.
We still appreciate everybody's love and support.
We're
seeing things come that we didn't think was going to come from this little hobby.
I know. This is like amazing.
What did they say? So this episode right now is going to be 22?
21.
This new one is episode 21.
This is episode 21 that we're recording right now. The big 2-1.
That's insane.
Good for us.
Well, that means we can have a drink.
Oh, yeah.
Our podcast is 21 years old.
Oh. 21 episodes old.
21 episodes old.
I love that. So we have a good one for you. We're going to do a two-parter because I can't help myself.
Kate and her two-parters. It's her thing.
I love it. So we are going to talk about Dr. Robert Bierenbaum.
Bierenbaum.
Yes, and he is an American former plastic surgeon who was convicted of murdering his wife. This was a Patreon request, so thank you so much to the Patreon that requested this case because it was fascinating and terrifying and awful.
I just want to also just go back a little bit. You had said in one of our previous episodes about Mr. Tanzler that somebody requested that, correct?
Yeah.
Whoever you were, that is still a nightmare that haunts me, okay?
Devin's never going to be the same.
I'm still reeling. It was our most recent episode that we had just released.
Yeah.
And I'm getting things like from people that listen and somebody said to me, I just looked over at my husband after we were listening together and, no, you're staying put. I love you, but you will stay put.
It's so true. That was definitely very twisted and dark and just super macabre.
So we love, absolutely love all of these suggestions because you're giving us stories of things that we've never heard of.
No, I know. This is amazing.
Yeah. So we're loving this and it helps us really get like a mixed dynamic of all the different stories that we can tell. But that one, I'm just like, ugh.
That one was a lot. So thank you, Patreon, for giving us a lot.
I'm still like...
Devin is still recovering. She's still a little pale. And
no makeup covers that one. No.
But yeah, that was a really good one. And we're loving all the requests that come in. And we do really try to honor all of the... which ones that we can of the
Patreon
requests.
We have like a running list going.
We do. So if it takes a little while, we're sorry. But we are getting more and more requests as things continue to grow. So we're going to try to... you know, we can only release as quickly as we can release.
And some of you guys, like, some of the stuff that, like, you request and then I quickly Google, I go, what
I know.
Fuck?
What is like, going who, on? Who I did mean, this?
I think right now there's a story about a phlebotomist one that is really
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that to
me. Phlebotomist one is like,
yes.
What?
Yes.
100%. I'll get to him when I can stomach it.
Devin will get to him
when, I can
when
stomach
she can stomach it.
It.
She's got to take a
that one might
weeks.
Have to, I mean, I have children, so that one, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Man.
I know.
All right. So Barenboim.
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 So Robert Barenboim was born in Newark, New Jersey on July 22nd, 1955. And he was the first son of an internist physician named Dr. Marvin Barenboim and his wife, Nettie. He grew up in West Orange, New Jersey. And part one is going to be a lot of sort of buildup. We're going to talk about his early life. We're going to talk about the early life of his wife, sort of how they met, how things started to escalate, the wedding, and then sort of get into the nitty gritty when it comes
so
to the actual
not,
actual crime.
I might not hate him in part one.
Might. Well, you're going to hate him a little bit.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So, by all accounts, he had a very early fascination with flight in particular. And plane was one of his first words.
When he was a kid,
when he was
a baby?
Like little.
Plane.
Which I actually think is kind of adorable.
My little kid, who's not even two yet, said tissue the other day.
Oh,
when
really?
He needed a tissue. Oh, and it was the cutest thing.
Little kids and their cute little words. Ugh, kills me. So, he was a pretty privileged kid, right? So he was the son, he was the only
he
child.
He was the son of a doctor.
Of
right?
a physician. So. And they lived in like Newark, New Jersey. Or I'm sorry, he grew up in West Orange, New Jersey. So they lived in West Orange and had this, you know, big, beautiful white house with like pillars and like a beautiful landscape property. Like it was a very picturesque house. And he never wanted for a thing. You know, he had whatever he wanted at any time. Now, at an early age, he also excelled in the sciences, and he also had a love for music, and he played the guitar. He actually like taught himself how to play the guitar and played
sounds like you.
Very proficiently. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I do play the guitar. Isn't that cool? I haven't. God, who has time for that anymore? I've got two little kids. Sometimes my daughter will like drag it out of the closet. I'm like, put that away. And I'm enough time.
Remember when you used to write music?
Oh, yeah. That was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Now I'm recording things that are not music. They're podcast episodes. Spoiler alert. So now he was doing really, really well in the sciences and he loved music. And it became very apparent very early on how intelligent he was. And his favorite toy in the world was his little like ham radio that he had. And he would use that to like talk to people around the world. And he just thought it was the coolest thing. So he was like this little kid just like, you know, trying to communicate with people in like Russia and like, you know, Switzerland and just like talk to them because he thought it was so cool. So he's like this super smart, like super ambitious little kid. And by the time he reached high school, he was an honor student. And he had, like I said, taught himself how to play the guitar and he played very, very musically very well. He was so, so good at it. And he took the college boards, which was like back then a college entry exam. Mm-hmm. And he scored astronomically high.
Smarty pants.
So, so, so smart. Other hobbies included self-defense. He liked taking self-defense and martial arts classes. Now, his discipline was judo. And a lot of what you learn there is like how to disable your opponent with like choke holds and different like incapacitating holds. Mm-hmm. So it's important in the future to remember that this is where he learned how to like do a choke hold that would like make someone pass out, like by wrapping your arm sort of like around the neck and cutting off the blood supply temporarily. Mm-hmm. So that's important to remember. So socially, though, there was like a lot to be desired. He really did not do well from a social standpoint. And this kind of almost makes me wonder if he was like on some sort of spectrum.
I was just going to ask.
You know what I mean? Like, and because this was, you know, back in the 60s, you know, when he was growing up, it may not have been, you know, so much on the forefront diagnostically. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like, you know, intellectually he was so, so strong, but socially he just never was able to make connections.
And do you have like an example?
So he was always like just super awkward and he didn't engage well and he never really had a whole lot of friends. Like his parents, like he made people uncomfortable is what people would say. Mm-hmm. Like he was blisteringly honest, quote unquote, which is something, you know, that people said about him. And it really just rubbed people the wrong way. Like, he would be honest to the point of being, like, very rude. Like, dude, you can't say that to people.
I remember the one time, the first time I cooked dinner for my husband way back when.
Did he tell you it was bad?
He told me my chicken was overcooked. And I was like, well, that was brutally honest.
You can be brutal. Brutal honesty is okay sometimes.
Yes.
It's okay sometimes.
In the right context.
In the right context.
I was like, well, I guess I don't have to worry about you lying to me.
Exactly. Now, again, doing so well scientifically and with his grades, he expressed a desire when he was in high school to start following in his dad's footsteps and becoming a physician. And when he graduated high school, he was at the very top of his class. And by all accounts, he had, like, this photographic memory. I mean, he could see something and years later describe in detail exactly what he saw at that day and time. It was, people likened talking to him with talking with a walking encyclopedia.
Yeah.
He was literally like a photograph, like a,
he's got it.
Talk to him. He's got it filed away in his brain, whatever that was. It's filed away.
That's always intrigued me.
It's interesting, right? So he had done so well in high school. He actually graduated a year early. And he did this again in college. He finished both college and his medical studies actually early. So he starts college at Rensselaer Polytech. Rensselaer, which is, I hope, how you say it. Rensselaer.
Is it in New York?
It is upstate Troy, New York.
Rensselaer.
It is Rensselaer?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
So he starts his studies there. That's in Troy, New York, upstate New York. And he did great. And then he went on to study medicine at Albany Medical College. And he graduated at the age of 22.
This is not that far from us.
No. Right. No, it's very close. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 22 years old, he graduated from medical school.
That's insane.
Isn't that insane?
That's when people get their bachelor's.
Very early. So he just excelled and just really flourished in an academic setting. Now, his parents were understandably so, so, so proud.
Look at my kid.
Look at my kid. I mean, it's so impressive. They were beaming with pride, but they did struggle to come to terms with his social development. And they thought it was something that they did. They felt somewhat responsible because they did push him a lot academically and in his activities to just achieve.
So instead of trying to make like a well-rounded.
Exactly. They felt like, you know, maybe we're a little bit responsible here for not pushing him to make an effort or making an effort to help him develop his social skills and instead just having him, you know, fostering his intelligence over everything else. So they felt somewhat responsible. So Bob's goal was always to become the first Jewish American astronaut. So even aside from medical school, he's like, he's still obsessed with flight, loves flight, wants to be an astronaut, wants to get his pilot's license. Like, he's a very well-rounded guy. So he's like, so I'm maybe going to use, you know, my medical degree to like pole vault myself into the NASA, you know, field,
get myself
and
to
maybe
the moon.
Get on a shuttle. Exactly. So that was his goal, is he wanted to be the first Jewish American astronaut. Now, he had always loved flight and wanted so badly to get on a space shuttle. And he interviewed with NASA once he completed medical school. So he was told that if he completed this residency program in internal medicine in Clear Lake, Texas, that it would improve his chances of eventually getting into like a NASA training program and getting actually physically on a shuttle. And so he completed the whole residency program, right? And 2 years later, he was turned down again by the NASA program. So that like really bummed him
buddy.
Out. Yeah. And so he was not really given a reason, but like my guess is that he just like made somebody uncomfortable because he was really good at that.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to be on a shuttle with you.
Yeah, exactly. This guy's a weirdo. I don't know. He's super smart, but he's a wicked weirdo. So after this, he took a cardiothoracic surgery residency position in Manhattan. So he returned from Texas to Manhattan. Now, when he entered that residency, he met and started dating someone named Marcy, who was another resident for a while, but it didn't really work out. And he had told people that it was like, you know, we both are, you know, in a residency program. We both work like 120 to 150 hours a week. We just don't have the time to like have a relationship. So that's sort of what everyone's, you know, impression was, that, you know, it just fell apart because it wasn't the right time for either of them and they were working too much. So ultimately, you know, he was hanging out with some friends, and the wife of one of his buddies, who was also a surgery resident, had said, you know, there's somebody I'd love to fix you up with.
Ooh.
And this person was Gail Katz. And so we're going to meet Gail now.
Gail.
So Gail was born March 8th on 1956 in Brooklyn, New York. And by all accounts, her childhood was pretty normal. She was an excellent student, and she made a lot of really good friends. She was heavily into dance as a child, all kinds. She would have like recitals and do great with that.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Now, her friends and family did say that as a child, she was a little bit like boy crazy.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, so she was very much like an attention seeker when it came to like male attention.
Mm-hmm.
And she even went so far as to, I guess she had like this little like preteen romance kind of with a boy, and things kind of escalated when she carved his name into her arm.
Oh.
Yeah. At age 14, she did this.
Can't you just, like, trace it in a notebook like other girls?
Yeah, I know. Can't you just, like, write, I love so-and-so, Mrs. So that, Gail, blah, blah,
blah. That ends up leaving a scar.
I mean, yeah. She, like, literally, so that...
You're scarred for life.
I feel like was, that's, like, a lot. And so, like, and any boy that would, like, look at her, she just, like, melted. She just, like, sought attention from boys all the time.
Mm.
So, her family didn't have a ton of money. But she was an excellent student and actually graduated high school early as well, just like Dr. Birnbaum did. So she graduated in 3 years. So in 1973, she graduated from high school. And then from there, she moved on to the State University of New York at Albany. But then in her sophomore year, dropped out when she got mixed up in some drug use and alcohol use.
Oh.
Yeah. So... she starts, like, living with this guy named Phil, who played in a local band. And he, I think, from what I'm reading, was kind of an influence, like, for her to kind of go down this path. And she started having, like, a really rough time. Like, she really became, like, pretty heavily involved in, like, drug use and alcohol use. And
it's unfortunate.
I know. Really had trouble, like, holding on to jobs and wasn't really being a productive member of society at that time. Now... her mom, being like a typical Jewish mother at the time, just wanted her to like go to college, get her degree, and then marry a dacta. That's like what you want.
Isn't
that for
what
your
they
daughter.
Always say.
That's what they say. Like, go to college, get
go
your degree,
the
and marry a dacta. That's it. And you know, Gail started to really like kind of look at her life and just like want the same. She's like, I don't want to, you know, do this forever. Like,
right.
I don't want to.
Is this what I'm going to make out of myself?
Exactly. So, she. Was seeing a therapist at the time who was really encouraging her to, like, get off the alcohol, get off the drugs, and, like, get a job that you can hold down so you can eventually go back to school and, you know, realize your goals.
Mm-hmm.
So even her therapist was like, it would be great if you could marry a doctor because I want this for you because mm-hmm. she's someone who really needs, like, a stable partner and, like,
right.
stability and essentially... which, like, I don't really agree with, like, his sentiment here. But the therapist was like, she struggles to take care of herself. So she should just, like, marry someone that can take care of her.
No.
Which, like, eye roll for me. I'm like, ugh,
figure out how to take care of yourself
how about you
first.
Figure out how to, exactly. Like, become become a member of society.
So she wants to marry
contribute.
A doctor so that they can take care of her
basically.
Financially and maybe physically and...
and her therapist was just, like, enabling this
right.
behavior instead of being like, let's look at you and see how we can give
fix
you some
you.
Coping
Start
mechanisms
with you.
And some tools. No. Yeah, the therapist was like, no, fuck that. Marry a doctor.
This is how you fix it.
Yeah. Which, like, I don't know, in the 70s, I guess? I mean, therapy really sucked in the 70s.
Anyone
apparently.
Have any advice from
Anybody?
Therapists that they got in the 70s?
I'd love to know.
Do you want to speak up?
I'd love to know. So.
So weird.
Just so interesting. So then she moved on from Phil the Rocker and she starts like getting jobs. She's still having a little trouble holding down jobs, but she's like kind of jumping from place to place.
Any idea if she's still kind of addicted to drugs? No,
she had at this point had sort of put that on hold. She's clean. Now, Gail was described as very intelligent, like very, very smart girl. Like I said, you know, in school subjects and such, and in school, she did amazing. You know, she always did great. So her therapist's way of addressing this, you know, mental health issue was to marry a doctor, which, you know, I don't agree with. But, you know, things started to kind of like spiral out of control, and she was having trouble, you know, holding on to jobs and finding a stable place to live. So she again turns to drugs and alcohol, unfortunately. And she started being in like a really, really bad place. And unfortunately, she even attempted suicide by drinking cleaning fluid that she found under her sink. And this was actually after a really, really rough breakup she went through that with a guy that she was dating for like a few months. So that landed her in the hospital. Somehow she survived that incident. It's incredible that she did. And she really, her friends really rallied around her. You know, her mom had sort of disconnected herself from her when she was like using substances because, you know, she didn't want to enable her daughter. But also she like really did not like was not very supportive at all. And I think Gail really like, you know, was missing that part of, you know, her mom and her parents supporting her in that. But her friends really stuck by her and really helped her through everything, which
is great. So even to the point when it got to suicide, her mom wasn't still really...
Yeah, no, not really. Oh. Yeah, not very helpful. So she gets past this, you know, maybe she finds a therapist that actually, you know, gives her some helpful advice and how to fix
inside her, before her just saying who you gotta marry.
That she obviously has, and that's beyond just marrying a doctor. So she... You know, she works for a couple of years trying to really focus on her mental health and, like, you know, really get past these issues with this new therapist. And she's doing better. And she's finally finding, like, consistent work. And she holds down this job for a year, which for her is really impressive.
Good.
And she stops drinking, stops using. You know, she's still a little lost because... You know, her family is now just coming back into her life and being supportive because she's not, you know, at rock bottom anymore, which, again, kind of shitty. But they're just now starting to support her again. Her mom is still saying, marry a doctor, marry a doctor. And she's just like, mom.
It's not going to solve everything.
It's not. And it's not. But that's what Gail wanted to. Gail really did want that life. So it's at this point when a good friend of her. Told her about this handsome doctor friend of her husband's and that they wanted to get them fixed up. So one of her friends was actually that doctor friend's wife. They were all in that same circle. So she talks this
Imagine how much she must have just like attached to the idea as soon as her friend's like, hey, I know this doctor.
Oh, I know.
Boom.
She was like, bam. Like,
lights go on.
And it's exactly what happened. That's literally exactly what happened. So she talks him right up, right? This friend, her name's Amanda. She talks him right up. She's like, he's a cardiothoracic resident in Manhattan. He's a pilot. He's a gifted musician, blah, blah, blah. Like on paper, this guy sounds incredible. And the two like meet and get together, and it is immediate infatuation on both sides. They, you know, they didn't have a lot in common and came from very different backgrounds. You know, he was very, very privileged as a child, and she really was not. But I think that it really worked because Gail was like such a little lost puppy and like really just needed that person and that man to like attach onto. And he was like so used to being, you know, groomed and coddled and in the spotlight that he just like flourished in that role.
With her doting on him.
Exactly. Right? He's like, this works. So I think that's why it worked so well. So he just like loved being worshipped and she loved worshipping a man. So, I mean, initially that works great, you know. So he could just like shine and be a genius. Now, they did a lot of like outdoor activities together. There was a lot of like hiking, biking, skiing. He like took her on plane rides around the world. Like they would just like on a whim be like, let's hop in my plane and like fly to Bali for the weekend.
My God. We were just talking about Bali over the weekend.
Were you really?
Because I said something about it. it came up about the Caribbean, but I was like, I want to go to like crystal clear ocean.
Oh, Bali.
With like one of those huts that just sits over the water.
So bad.
And my husband's like, we're going to have to go to like Bali or something.
Bali or the Maldives or something. Yes. Yeah. I would love, love, love to do that. Yeah. Anybody else have been there? Because we want to
stay. I just want to stay in a hut on the ocean.
I just want to like look through my glass floor and watch the fish. Oh. Isn't that like a thing in some of those places?
I would think so.
That's what I want to see.
So I'm jealous they just went Bali on a whim.
Oh, I know. And they do that. Like, it'll be like, oh, let's just like go lunch in New Orleans. Like, let's just go to lunch in New Orleans. Or like, so relatable, right? Like, oh, I'm totally. Just going to like hop on my husband's like jet and he's just, or my boyfriend's jet. And
he flies us.
We're just going to go to New Orleans for lunch because I feel like having, you know, seafood and then we're going to, you know, come back. Makes a whole, so relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Not. So they start getting really, really serious. Like really quickly, both sides, their families were like, "Aren't you guys like you guys are fine?" Like,
his really family is probably like he's made a social connection, like you know, like a relationship.
He has
like,
a
fine.
Relationship. Yeah. This is crazy. Now, they had, like I said, had really, really little in common and came from different backgrounds. So, as the relationship got more serious, you know, he started really trying to talk Gail into going back to school and getting a degree. And she was like kind of rolling her eyes. Like she's like, you know, school is like a chore. I mean, she did great in school, but for her, it's like she just really wasn't interested, you know, mm-hmm. and that's why she dropped out. She mm-hmm. really just wasn't interested in like getting a degree. But, you know, she wanted that life and she didn't want to give up on him. And she wanted to, you know, really impress him and sort of like make sure that, you know, he saw her as somewhat of an equal. So she did start to look into, you know, going back to school.
Because, it's, I mean, here's an idea. Like, you're smart and intelligent. Let's make that life for yourself.
Well, exactly. I mean, exactly.
Instead of relying on the husband. Or exactly. Soon to be husband, rather.
And I sort of feel like there was a little bit of, like, because he was so privileged and, like, he was sort of up on this pedestal, according to him and his family, that, mm-hmm. like, marrying a college dropout, like, ew.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which, like, is... Like, problematic, but right. I feel like that was definitely a component, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Now on Gail's side there were doubts as well, because Bob, of course, as we know, is like a certain way. He's you know, very socially awkward.
Uh-huh.
He's lots and lots of trouble making connections. He rubs people the wrong way. Uh-huh. He's brutally honest. He uh-huh. makes people uncomfortable. So that was kind of hard on Gail at times. And, like, the more serious they got, the more he began to, like, really irritate her with some of his behaviors and some of his, you know, fixations. And, again, what I'm hearing is, like, really sounding like he's on, like, the spectrum
like
somewhere.
Like an Asperger's type
of
thing.
Yes, like a high-functioning, really mm-hmm. high-functioning mm-hmm. Autism or something. Now, she really just wanted the life, though. Like, she wanted to be a doctor's wife mm-hmm. so bad mm-hmm. because she wanted to not have to rely on herself to live, mm-hmm. essentially. She wanted that security and that stability.
I want to be dependent.
Well, it's true. And, you know,
sorry.
This relationship, obviously, we're talking about this because this relationship ends up going very, very badly. And you know, I think that she was never really given the tools to succeed on her own. And I feel like
of course
she was.
Not.
Grossly
Instead
misled.
Instead of her therapist telling her how
and
to
her
become
parents.
An independent woman.
I think nobody in her life really supported her to a point of that she could be empowered. And she did not feel empowered because nobody was empowering her. So, you know, people that are having these struggles these days, like, you have to lift them up. You have to empower them. Like, they rely on their social structure and their support system, their safety net, so mm-hmm. much. And if you don't have that, it's like, mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep being the way that I am, which mm-hmm. is dependent on other people. Now, in addition, she also confided in some of her friends that Bob didn't really satisfy her, like, sexually. So he, like, could not resist her physically.
Could you imagine?
Oh, I know.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, Kate, this ain't going so well for me. Like,
and they're not even married yet.
Come on.
So
what?
So apparently he was like voraciously attracted to her. Like, she was beautiful. I mean, okay. She was gorgeous. She really had a, you know, she was a very, very good looking lady. And he was like, you know, very, very attracted to her, you know, was, but had trouble like reciprocating that. So I think that he just didn't pick up on the signals because, again, I think he was, he had something. But I think he just didn't pick up on the signals that like she was left unsatisfied after almost every sexual encounter. Which is sad for her.
Of course. Yeah. But again, in any kind of relationship, I would imagine you bring it up.
Well, you would think so.
Say, hey, mm-hmm. instead of like, yes. just talking to people about it.
Yeah. Exactly. I totally feel like this was not the way to go
about it. If you have a best friend to be like, hey, like, how do I bring this up to him? That's one thing.
Yeah.
You know, to have that conversation with a friend. But then to just be saying to like everybody else.
And this guy's supposed to be your partner in life. Like, communicate, you know. And I think that, you know, she was just, she wanted to go along with it because, again, you know, she wants that male attention and she wants to be with this man who is like a big deal on paper mm-hmm. and is, you know, going to give her this great life. And she's just like wants to, and at this point, just like find a way to deal with it. You know what I mean? So she did reluctantly eventually agree to go back to school, like I said. So her friend Amanda.
Reluctantly.
Reluctantly.
How tough.
So Amanda is this friend, right, that they both kind of share. Now, Amanda, who she confided in, did say that Gail seemed as if getting ready to marry Bob and, like, you know, plan a wedding. You know, all those really exciting things, like when you're mm-hmm. going to marry somebody, when you're going to get married, like planning a wedding is so, like, fun and exciting.
Yes,
and
of course.
So for Gail, it was...
Speaking of, yeah. almost 10-year anniversary, Kate.
I know.
It's coming up.
In, like, a couple weeks. I can't believe it. So Amanda had said that... watching Gail prepare and like make preparations for a wedding to marry Bob was like, quote, preparing to swallow a bitter pill that you don't want, but you know will be good for you, end quote. So it was kind of like neither one of them, I think, was like
truly invested. It's kind of like if you looked up the word settled in the dictionary, mm-hmm. here it is.
Exactly. Like she was the only one out of desperation, really, mm-hmm. that would tolerate his bullshit and you know what I mean, and
just
actually
because
be able to make
he
a
had
connection.
The MD with right. the money and exactly. the abilities to give her the life
exactly
that she wanted.
Exactly right. And that's why he kept her around and she kept him around, because she wanted that life. So her parents, of course,
this doesn't
now,
sound like a recipe
no,
for
this
disaster
is,
at
this
all
is really
I mean.
Exactly, this is not going to go well. So her parents, of course, now back in her life because she's going to marry this successful man, you know, and because she's following the path that they want for her, are pumped that she's going to be marrying a doctor. And they met him and felt that he was quirky, but in the presence of others, he was always very polite, you know, nice. Until he said something off color and offended everybody in the room and unwittingly. But just on paper, he was so wonderful that everyone kind of tried to look past that.
I'm interested. I want to know an example of some of these off color things that he said.
I would
you know,
love
like,
to know. Yeah. I don't know any specifics.
How
but just,
sour was it? You know?
Yeah, I know. I'm sure there were some that were like, damn.
Does it
Sally,
makes me
no.
go like... Is it something that was sour and off color for the 70s or something that now would make me go, ooh.
Oh, I know, right?
You know?
So, now the differences did start to kind of catch up with them. And they did start having, like, pretty regular arguments that got, mm-hmm. like, heated. So, Gail had confided in Amanda another story about how the two of them were headed into Chinatown at one point in New York to get something to eat. And it was nighttime. It was kind of rainy. They were starting to argue about where they were going to park the car. Like a stupid, like, married couple thing to,
yep.
like, bicker about. You know
yep.
what I mean? And so it got really nasty. Like, there started to be, like, name calling. It escalated really quickly. And Gail, you know, just, like, dropped it. She's like, I'm just, you know, I'm not engaging. I'm dropping it. Park wherever the hell you want. I don't give a shit.
Yep.
Like, you know what
yep.
I mean? Like,
yep.
like how most of these are supposed to end. Like,
yes.
this is where it's supposed
yes.
to end.
Yes.
And instead of, like, dropping it too, Bob, like, turns the car around and drives them both home in utter silence. And so this is where it gets crazy. So that night, Gail allegedly found Bob trying to drown her cat in the toilet bowl
what?
Out of anger. Out of anger.
What?
Drown her cat.
Over a parking Even if it was something big,
yeah.
Trying to drown, like, forget about what it was about.
Haven't you seen that Netflix documentary?
Which one?
Don't Fuck with Cats. Oh, God, it's so good. You have to watch it. Oh, it's so good.
If I could watch anything other than Blippi, it would be amazing.
It's so true.
I know.
So, I mean, this just, like, made me boil because, like, the people that just, like, you know, kill animals, you know what I mean? And those,
yes.
It's like... So this was Gail's first encounter with, you know, switch flipped Bob, where, you know, he wasn't like the mild mannered, you know, mm-hmm. weird, but mild mannered guy that everybody mm-hmm. thought he was. But like, this was a whole new side, like this rage, this anger she started seeing come out in their arguments. And, you know, her walking into him trying to kill her cat was obviously very distressing and alarming.
Hello.
So, and this was 3 weeks before their wedding.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. So.
Red flag?
Yes. Anyone? Seriously. So, she and her sister, Elaine. So, he tried to drown the cat. She stopped him before he killed the cat.
Thank you for
so
clarifying.
The cat was okay. She and her sister, the following day, took the cat to a shelter the next morning so that mm-hmm. he could no longer injure the cat. Now, she had said after that incident that she immediately started becoming, like, really scared of him. Like, she's like, I clearly, you know, did not realize that he was capable of such insanity of doing that, you know?
Could you imagine having a child with him?
That's the thing.
If this is what he's going to do.
Exactly.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Now, her sister was, like, having a hard time believing the story. Like, she was like, are you sure that he was trying to... Like, that sounds really... Like, she was having trouble believing it because she, you know, she had met Bob and she mm-hmm. knew... And she just had trouble, figuring that this guy was capable of doing that. Like, this guy's supposed to be, like a good guy. And it was literally, like the flip of a switch. And he went psycho on a cat. So, Gail had said to Elaine, her sister, quote... Bob looks good on paper until you meet him. And that's when you see that he's a social moron, end quote.
Aww.
And nevertheless, Elaine was like, well, are you sure you want
to
marry this
guy?
Like,
you got 3 weeks to change your mind, girlfriend.
So she really wanted to go on with the wedding. And she said, quote,
he looks good on paper.
Yeah.
It's
and,
what...
she thought she could change him. She said, quote, I can still change him.
Lesson number one.
You can never change them. You just can't. Now, Gail and Bob do end up getting married on Sunday, August 29th, 1982, in a Manhattan synagogue, and they honeymooned in Greece. And shortly after that,
Sounds lovely, by the way.
Oh, my God, I know. Can you imagine? God. So, shortly after that, he begins his fellowship in cardiothoracic surgery, which is, you know, the step mm-hmm. after residency. Now, shortly after that, though, he decided against that and to take a residency in plastic surgery because he found that in cardiothoracic surgery, I mean, obviously your mortality rate is going to be higher because the stakes are higher.
Mm-hmm.
In plastic surgery, you know, you can have a bad outcome, but 9 times
they're
out of 10,
medically stable.
It's not life-threatening. Exactly. But a bad outcome in cardiothoracic surgery and they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob starts studying as well to be a flight instructor. He already had his pilot's license, but he started becoming an instructor. And so he was logging more hours and more fly time for that, too. So he's just getting busier, like, by the week. No time for Gail. So Gail starts school back up. She begins working towards her master's degree in psychology.
Good.
And she did.
Oh, wait a minute.
I know.
That's ironic.
I know. It is. Well, maybe she'll learn something about herself.
That's what I'm saying. The irony.
Exactly. So she developed a lot of anxiety right after the wedding around Bob. And she began seeing another psychiatrist again, like twice a week she mm-hmm. would go. And Bob, like, was the subject that dominated every session.
Mm-hmm.
So she said she was afraid to make Bob angry because he would get very ragey very quickly. And she would, like, see this, like, flash in his eye.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just turn into this, like, terrifying, like, oh, shit, I don't even know who you are in this moment. Like a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And So 3 years go by. They're married for 3 years.
Wow.
And they argue quite a bit. She would sort of like taunt him and tease him about something. And that is what really pushed his buttons. Like the two would push each other's buttons so bad that she would get very naggy, very teasy and taunty. And he would just fly off the fucking handle.
It's like what happens with toxic relationships.
Yeah, it's
like
very
when you know what is going to drive the other one crazy.
And you do it.
Yes.
You just do
to
it.
Piss him off.
Exactly right. So that's exactly what was going on here. It was super toxic. The two really were never all that compatible. Mm-hmm. And like this should not have gone as far as it did. And so like a switch would flip and he would just fly into a rage. And now Gail again confided in some friends that Bob had these rage issues intermittently. And he would blow up easily and do quote unquote scary things. And she at one time actually confided in her psychologist that he grabbed her and choked her, like grabbed her by the neck and choked her for a period of time into unconsciousness. Yeah. And that she woke up, you know, later on and was okay and went and got checked out at the doctor's. But her psychiatrist warned her to leave him. This psychiatrist at least sounds like he knows a little bit what he's talking about.
A lot better than the other one.
He's like, literally, you're in danger. This guy's
obviously
very abusive. He could really hurt you. And it sounds like he's like escalating. Like,
right.
He was drowning cats. And now here we are. Like,
right.
What are you doing? So he was so concerned, in fact, that he had her sign a tear-us-off letter, which... At the time, in her state, a tear-us-off letter is a letter. It's essentially like a release form that if a psychologist has significant concern of your welfare because of your living situation and they warn you to remove yourself from that living situation, they have you sign this waiver to essentially document and prove that they advised you to do that so that they can't later be held accountable if something bad was to happen
to her.
And actually that came about because that exact situation did happen. Mm-hmm. And it's called the Tarasoff letter because there's, you know, it was a situation. I think her last name was Tarasoff, but she ended up getting killed by her partner and her psychiatrist knew about the abusive behavior and could not and did not urge her to leave the situation.
Right.
So now that letter at the time existed. So he had her sign a Tarasoff letter because he was so concerned about her physical state. Now, Gail... at this point is so disconnected from her husband and is just like so over his behavior towards her that she starts having extramarital affairs.
More boy crazy stuff.
Yeah. So he's really like logging so many hours being a flight instructor and being a physician. And, you know, she didn't realize that part about being married
to a doctor.
Yep,
not that side.
If you want the male attention, you're probably not going to get it after a little while. So she starts having affairs, and she had more than one. Now, she was having an affair with someone named Anthony, and also had reconnected with an old flame. Hey.
I'm like, is the dog behind there?
Yep. I'll get out of there. Hi. Now, she had affairs with someone named Anthony, and then also she had reconnected with an old flame, somebody by the name of Ken. That she had dated for a while before she met Bob. And so she was sleeping with both of them, actually. So.
Well, then.
I know. So she was quite sure that Bob didn't know about the affairs, but one event did like really kind of freak her out. So one night she was in bed with Anthony and Bob was at work at the hospital and the phone rings. And this was like in the evening and it was Bob calling from the hospital. And she thought it was really weird because he never. Like called her to check on her or called her to talk
to her.
So she thought
he was suspicious.
So she thought maybe, he was suspicious. So she like froze. And then she asks like, hey, Bob, like, what's up? She's literally in bed with this guy at the time. And she's like, hey, Bob, what's up? And he just said, I just wanted to ask what was for dinner. You know, what are we having for dinner? And she was like, I don't know. And then, like, the conversation was short, and then it just, like, ended, and
she said to him, you gotta go.
You gotta go. So that just, like, really freaked her out because she's like,
Anthony, get the hell out of my bed.
I feel like maybe he knew something was going on, or he was at least suspicious, because why in God's name would he call and ask about dinner? We never even talk, let alone does he ever call me and ask what's for dinner.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Suspicious. So... Gail also told her sister and a psychiatrist that after his old girlfriend and he ended things, remember Marcy, who was also a resident physician at the time, they dated way before he and Gail got together. Now, apparently, he had finally opened up to Gail that things sort of ended, and they fought when things ended. It was not like this amicable, we're both working too much, we can't be together sort of thing. It was like not so amicable. And Bob was so pissed that he used his key that he had to her apartment to let himself into her apartment and strangled her fucking cat to death.
What? These poor cats.
These poor cats, man.
What?
I can't. So that, again, is another thing that's making Gail like, who the fuck is this man? And what, you know, why is he? And obviously, as she's confiding all of this into her psychiatrist, another reason to sign the Tarasoff letter, because he's like, obviously he's escalating because he's now physically put his hands on you.
Right.
And choked you into unconsciousness. Like, you're next. I'm sorry, but you're next. Now, July.
What a tough situation for the psychiatrist.
It's so hard because you can only do so much. You can advise. You can only do so much. You know what I mean? So July 7th, 1985, Gail tells her sister Elaine, I am so fed up with Bob's mistreatment of me. I'm seeing other people, that she plans on leaving him. She's like, I'm going to leave him. I can't do this anymore. I can't be in this relationship. I don't feel safe. Like, some shit's going to go down. So she was planning to confront him that day. Midnight rolls around. Gail's mom gets a call from Bob. Okay. And Bob says to her, hey, have you seen Gail? She hasn't come home. And Bob claims that the two had had an argument, that she had said something that insinuated that she might hurt herself, and then disappeared, and she hasn't returned. So, of course, Gail's mom freaks the hell out. And the following day, I mean, it's midnight at that time, but the following day, you know, when she calls and, you know, realizes that she still hasn't shown up, she drives right to their apartment. And she drives from New Jersey to their Manhattan apartment. And the first thing she notices is that Gail's purse is still there with her keys and her wallet and her phone and everything. I mean, maybe not her phone. What year is this? The 80s.
The 80s, yeah. No, so she doesn't have a phone.
But keys, wallet, cigarettes, everything that she would have taken with her is still inside. How the hell would she have even left?
Right.
So she immediately
panics. That phone call was obviously the first cover-up.
Exactly right.
Place the phone call that I'm concerned that she's missing.
Exactly right.
Yep.
So now, her first thought, Gail's mom's first thought, is that maybe Bob had done something with her. Like, she had that sort of in the back of her mind.
How terrifying.
I know. Now, the following day, Bob calls her friend Amanda. Remember Amanda? And he says, you know, I'm really concerned about Gail. I haven't heard from her. She hasn't come home. And he tells the same thing to Amanda. And he says, he said, I'm really worried that she's going to do something to hurt herself, like using her past against her.
Right.
And he goes and quote unquote looks for Gail. Who the hell knows what?
Acting like they the concerned do. Husband.
Exactly right. Now, later on, a neighbor that lives downstairs from them in Manhattan, because remember, they're in an apartment building. A neighbor testified that what she had heard that evening was an argument indistinguishable to her. She couldn't make out what was being said.
Right.
But there was a lot of yelling. There was crashing, like things were being thrown and broken. All of a sudden, there was a loud crash or a thump, followed by absolute silence. Several minutes after the absolute silence, she heard dragging, like you're moving furniture, you know, like moving wooden furniture across a wood floor, you know, that like chattery, draggy noise. She said she heard that for several minutes and then more silence, still nothing.
But never could hear two voices after that.
Never heard two voices after that. So to her, even hearing that unfold upstairs, she said was very unsettling before she even knew that Gail had disappeared. And that is where we're going to leave things. I know, cliffhanger.
Come on.
That is where we're going to leave things for next time.
I can only imagine what the dragging was.
We don't know.
I feel like I do know. I think we know. I mean, hello.
I think we know. So,
You always leave me on the cliffhangers.
I know. It's fun this way. I love torturing you just a little bit. A healthy amount. So
I guess we got to wait for part two.
We do have to wait for part two. Spoiler alert, it does not end well for Gail.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, he made it on a podcast called Med Crimes. So. Yeah,
that's true. All right. So if you want to follow us on Instagram.
I was going to say, what are you thinking about saying?
I don't know. I started that weird though, didn't I? You start, because this is always weird when we start it the opposite way.
If you want to follow us on Instagram, check us out at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can send us a Twitter at Med Crimes Producer.
Is it always because you want to say Twitter?
Yes, that's why, not, Devin.
Not fair. Find us on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you wish to become a Patreon, visit www.patreon.com/MedCrimesPodcast.
Or you can email us your crazy stories.
We want to hear a crazy
story.
Spooky,
crazy, freakily creepish.
Unfucking believable.
Yeah, what she said.
You can't make this shit up. We want to hear about it.
Email us at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Please do.
Until next time.
Peace out.
Peace.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.